And now on our end to the Canadian novelist Annabel Lyon, who had a surprise bestseller with her book The Golden Mean. Now, this one told the story of the philosopher Aristotle and his interactions with the boy who became Alexander the Great. Annabel's new book takes us back into this world. This one's called The Sweet Girl, and it's narrated by Aristotle's daughter, a savvy, independent girl named Pythias. Pythias really did exist. She's mentioned in a document that's believed to be Aristotle's will. Now, Annabel has imagined Pythias as a complex character, constrained by her culture, but also liberated by education and by radical new ways of thinking in a time of political change. Here's Annabel Lyon speaking from Vancouver to Kate Evans about The Sweet Girl and about what philosophy meant in the age of Aristotle.
In that day and time, the word philosophy meant something much broader than it means to us now. It meant science, it meant, you know, biology, it meant astronomy. It was a whole package of things. And the ancients really approached, and Aristotle in particular, I think, really approached all of those subject matters with such an openness and such a curiosity without any sense of limit. And I think that we've lost that a little bit in sort of contemporary intellectual pursuits. It's people getting more and more specialized in narrower and narrower areas. And, you know, with someone like an Aristotle, this idea that astronomy could be linked to metaphysics, could be linked to dissection, could be linked to poetry, you know, there was something really wide open and new and wonderful about that for me.
And a lot of that too is based on direct observation. So it meant he was completely engaged with the world, wasn't he?
That's right, and that's something that was very new with Aristotle and really makes him, I think, one of the first modern intellectual figures. He was sort of the first empirical scientist, really, as we understand that term. He went out and he collected specimens. He got his hands dirty. He was the first scientist that we know of to do animal dissection. He really got in there and looked at the world and, you know, was curious at a very deep level. And it wasn't about the sort of dry feats of intellect sitting in an armchair. It was really getting out and engaging with the world. There's something that I think still speaks to us today in that kind of a mind, that kind of a curiosity. For me, as a 21st century Canadian woman, I think one of the biggest struggles that I had was not to impose, you know, my 21st century North American feminist, you know, values back 2,400 years onto this character who couldn't possibly sustain all of that. And certainly in the writing of the second book, that first book, the first novel, The Golden Mean, really featured him as the main character. But in the second book, you know, with The Sweet Girl, looking at his daughter more, we're looking at the world of women and their role in society, their role in a family. And I found it really, it was sort of a constant struggle that I had with myself not to impose how I would have felt in any given situation. And so I felt that I really had to sort of crack through the marble casing, if you will, on all of these famous characters and sort of think, where's the person underneath this? You know, what were the emotions that they would have experienced? It wasn't so much what made us different, but what did we share?
And one way to do that, to explore lives shared, was to resurrect or imagine a woman of this educated philosopher's family, Aristotle's daughter, Pythias.
Well, the historical Pythias is almost completely anonymous. We know her name. We know that Aristotle had a daughter who would have been about 16 years old when he died. His will is a real historical document. And what we know of his home life, of the people around him and his companions, his wife, his children, we know from that document. And really, as I say, all that we know is her name, that she existed, and that she would have been about 16 when he died. So really, it was wide open to me to invent her as a character. And that was a very different experience from the writing of the first book. The Golden Mean was very much a male book. It was a book about politics and warfare and famous men, Aristotle and Alexander. With this book now, I knew that I had sort of left out half the world with that first book. I had left out the world of the women and the kitchens and slaves and the sort of the magical side of the ancient Greek thought. And so I wanted to look at that in this book. So, yeah, and it was an interesting sort of change of horses, if you will, because I sort of went into the second novel thinking, yeah, I know a little thing or two about ancient Greece. You know, I can imagine what a woman's life would have been like. And I realized as I started to do the research that I was actually quite wrong in a lot of the things that I'd been assuming.
In what way? What was it that surprised you?
Well, again, I think this is my sort of, my feminism was informing my very dim view of what a woman's life would have been then. I imagined them illiterate. I imagined them dying like flies in childhood, in childbirth at the age of 13 and 14. I imagined them sort of locked in their rooms weaving all day and living lives of absolute depression and misery, because that's what I imagine I would have felt in such circumstances. But as soon as I started doing a little research, I realized that you had women occupying all sorts of roles in that society. You had women acting as priestesses, for instance, which were roles of great political importance. They had control of funds and of land through these positions. You had women running small businesses. They might have a stall in the marketplace preparing food or clothing that they'd embroidered. You had women acting in a medical capacity because women treated women's problems, and so the midwife was the person who would deliver a baby. Men didn't deliver babies. So it was really interesting once I started to dig in a little bit. And then the overriding question for me became not how could a woman possibly tolerate such a miserable existence. It became something I think that was more elusive for me and more interesting, and that was, what would a happy life for a woman have looked like at that time?
Well, tell me then how else you found her, because you mentioned, I mean, she exists in his will, but in terms of finding the scraps or traces or material that you wanted to draw on to create her, where did you go?
Well, the more that I sort of researched what possible roles there were for women in that society at that time, the more I had trouble choosing which one I wanted to assign to her. I knew what Aristotle's own intentions for her were from the will. He intended that she should marry her much older cousin. We know that Aristotle's views on young girls in marriage were somewhat unconventional at the time. He believed that women shouldn't marry until their bodies had stopped developing, so basically at the age of 17 or 18, rather than at the onset of puberty. And so I thought, all right, we've got a girl who would not be married yet. When her father dies, she is left alone in the world without any male supervision. I'm going to let her try on a number of these different careers and see what might suit her, see where her skills might fit. For instance, I let her try on the role of midwife. And this is somewhat rooted in history, because we know that Aristotle's own father had been a physician. We know from Aristotle's writings on biology that he had some... more than some, he had quite a bit of medical knowledge, and so I imagined him passing some of that on to her. I have her attempt to be a priestess. I have her try a number of different roles, but because she is a young girl alone in a society that's unfriendly to women, she does end up working as what was called a hetaira, or a very high-end prostitute, because I didn't want to blink away from that as well. I find a lot of historical fiction tends to construct narratives around putting your heroine in peril and then snatching her away and rescuing her, or having a prince come and rescue her at the last minute. And I really wasn't too interested in that. So she's going to go down a number of fairly dark roads. And then I hope that the ending is a little bit unexpected for the reader.
Well, some of the other interesting and empty areas, and you mentioned the position of women and the sort of imaginative leap we need to make into their lives. The other important aspect of the ancient world, of course, is the role of slavery. And you do Yes. deal with that too. And I wonder how much of an imaginative or writerly challenge that was.
That was something that was really difficult in both books, I have to say. I have... As I'm sure you can tell, I have great reverence for Aristotle as an intellectual figure. I admire so much the genius of the breadth of his vision. But the two real blind spots that he had were in his views on women and in his views on slavery, because he himself was a slave owner. Again, from the will, that wonderful document, we know this because he lists every single member of his household by name and says what he wants to happen to each of them after his death. And for instance, he provides for the freeing of certain slaves, and others should be given, you know, token amounts of money, and so-and-so should be allowed to marry, and all of this. So I have to say, in The Sweet Girl, every character who's named in there actually comes very directly from that document. But yeah, there is a character who recurs in both novels, the character of Tycho, who is a slave, who, after Aristotle's death, becomes a sort of, almost a father figure to Pythias, and I find him a heartbreaking figure in a lot of ways. He's someone that I feel a great amount of affection for, the way I do for my Pythias, and I also know that the limitations on his life, even were he freed, they would never disappear. He's been marked by his society in a way that he could never free himself of. And so it was something that I really had to wrestle with, and I had to make a conscious decision. Am I going to sort of gloss this over in this aspect of thought of this man that I admire so much, or am I going to confront it straight on? And in the end, I realized I had to do that, and hence his importance in the second book.
But given that the classical world has been invented and reinvented more than most in a way, and so many of the sources actually come from centuries later,
yes,
does this give you more or less freedom as a fiction writer, do you think?
I found that it gives me more. I've often sort of reflected that if I was attempting to write a novel set in Shakespeare's time, for instance, or set in Victorian London or something like that, I could go on endlessly doing the research and really never come to an end of it. Whereas with the ancient world, when you actually go back to the primary sources, when you look at what was written of that place, of that person at that time, you can draw a pretty defined circle around what is known, and then you can see the sort of the vast landscape outside of that circle, which is everything that you have to make up as a novelist. And for me, I find that freeing, because I know exactly, okay, I need to include this, this, and this, and then I have room to create fiction here. And so, you know, for me, for someone who's a fiction writer, those question marks and those big black sort of empty areas are really liberating. I found them really liberating.
And so just finally, Annabelle, I'm wondering how you'd describe your writing genre-wise, because it's literary, of course, but given the distance and the efforts of imagination, do you think of it as historical fiction or something like fantasy, and does it matter?
What an interesting question. I've never been asked that before. I have to say I have always resisted the term of historical fiction, because to me that implies something about the language that's being used. You know, you have a lot of people walking around very stiffly saying, good lord, my liege, zounds, you know, and I don't have them speak that way. They speak with a very contemporary Canadian diction. It also implies to me something about, you know, descriptions of great big dresses and lavish palaces and people riding mounts instead of horses and that sort of, and none of that is of interest to me. So I've always said, you know, I try and write a contemporary novel, which happens to be set 2,400 years ago, but that's really not the most important thing about it. But the idea of fantasy, wow, that's something really interesting, isn't it? That had never really occurred to me, because in a way you are dealing with a lot of the same liberties. When you set it that far back in history, you're dealing with a lot of the same liberties that a fantasy writer has.
That's Kate Evans speaking with the Canadian novelist Annabelle Lyon. And her book is called The Sweet Girl. It's published by Atlantic Books. And the book before that, the first one, is called The Golden Mean.